welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm HHCN editor Bob Holly. There has been a lot of news in the home and community-based services world over the past few months. To help us make sense of it all, I recently connected with Addus Chief Strategy Officer Darby Anderson, who also serves as Vice Chairman for the Partnership for Medicaid Home-Based Care. We'll hear from him in just a second, but first, a word from our sponsors. Looking to build physician partnerships and increase home health referrals? How about expanding in new locations through mergers and acquisitions? Homecare Homebase helps growing agencies of all sizes streamline processes and enhance interoperability with a flexible blueprint for long-term success. We'll help you attract top talent and enhance clinical care with expert tools that allow clinicians to complete required documentation in the home, not after hours. We could also tackle revenue cycle management for you, giving you more time to focus on the patients and families who need you. Grow your business with the number one industry leader. To learn more, go to hchb.com/growhomehealth. The American Rescue Plan, EVV, the American Jobs Plan, minimum wage increases in some states. There is no shortage of HCBS topics to talk about these days. Addus Chief Strategy Officer Darby Anderson and I try tackling just a couple of those topics for this episode of Disrupt. In addition to his role at Addus, one of the largest personal care services companies in the nation with an increasingly larger home health and hospice footprint, Anderson also serves as Vice Chairman of the Partnership for Medicaid Home-Based Care. I'd like to now welcome Darby Anderson, EVP and Chief Strategy Officer at Addus. Darby is also the Vice Chairman of the Partnership for Medicaid Home-Based Care. Darby, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Disrupt.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Well, we have a lot of points to hit on, but I thought I'd just start by asking, how has Addus rebounded from the initial COVID-19 disruption that really started last spring, had some peaks and valleys throughout 2020? Just listening to, you know, Addus's Q1 call, it really sounds like you found a new normal. I know you've even been talking about kickstarting M&A activity again, for example.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. It certainly has been a challenging year, I think, for everybody in our industry, although when you look at it, I think it obviously could have, there was certainly the potential to impact collective industry businesses a lot more than I think we have been by the pandemic, but certainly not underestimating or trying to understate the impact that that has been felt. Yeah, I think our quarterly filings kind of speak for themselves in terms of revenue and census growth. I think it's safe to say we're seeing a rebound in both new consumer growth as well as revenue. We're seeing, you know, you talk about a lot of enthusiasm for home and community-based care in sort of the history and scope of reporting on the pandemic of, you know, the significant problems that nursing homes faced. And I don't think we've really seen kind of that emerge yet, right? There is a return to some level of new normal, but I don't think we're really seeing as an industry the sort of increase in perhaps consumer preference, family preference for care at home versus institutionalization.
All right. Well, what's going on with Addus and Homecare Homebase? Could you tell our listeners a little bit about the new initiative to build a personal care inclusive EHR that spans the full home-based care continuum?
Yeah, sure. We've been in the market for a while to consolidate the multiple systems that we're using to manage our personal care business. We've done a number of acquisitions in the personal care space and have not migrated those businesses migrated those businesses to our existing Horizon system. So we're operating on, you know, three, maybe even four different systems, but we just have not been able to identify a system that really kind of fully meets our diverse and perhaps somewhat unique needs. We've had a relationship with Celltrack for a really long time, really successfully using their product to support our home care direct care staff with EVV functionality. And so now we're excited to combine those capabilities, our kind of extensive expertise and history in personal care business with that of Homecare Homebase and create a solution to optimize scheduling, streamline authorization management, improve EVV compliance, and then ease the back-end compliance billing payment processes in personal care and to get the luxury of doing that in a system that's integrated with our home health and hospice systems.
Yeah, it seems like something that really makes a lot of sense just considering how intertwined all the different levels of care are these days. You know, providers talk so much about breaking down silos. It would make sense that we do that from a technology perspective as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think we've only scratched the surface of the integration or coordination of personal care services into the larger healthcare delivery system. That's, I think, a really important emerging trend and something that we just need to make happen.
You know, you mentioned EVV, electronic visit verification, obviously a really important topic. It's not one that we cover a ton compared to some of our other threads that we regularly touch on. How has that rollout gone? How is the world of EVV right now?
Yeah, I think it's probably lost a little bit of steam in terms of, you know, during the pandemic, both in sort of publicity or conversations around EVV, but a little bit in terms of slowing the implementation rollouts in states. It is, you know, like most things in Medicaid, it's very state specific. A lot of states are adopting a more open model solution that allows the providers to utilize a tested and true EVV system, but one of their own selection for the point of care delivery of EVV that then interfaces or aggregates up to a system that can be accessed by the state or the managed health plans to, you know, really meet the conditions of EVV. Other states have gone a route of just closed system and said, you know, all providers have to use this system. And that inflexibility really kind of takes a lot of the efficiency out of the inherent nature of electronic visit verification, right? You shouldn't have to duplicate systems or do multiple data entry into multiple systems. Well, if you have a closed model system, there's no voiding it. So we continue, you know, through the partnership and at Addus, we're continuing to really try to promote the use of an open model solution. Hopefully states that maybe got started in a closed model will adapt and open those systems up.
All right. Well, we do have lots of points to hit on, so we're going to shift gears a little bit here. Let's talk about the American Rescue Plan. I know that there were a lot of questions, some concerns about that 10% FMAP bump for home and community-based services. You know, I think at face value, it overwhelmingly seems like a good thing, but it's also only for a limited duration, not on an ongoing basis. What was your initial reaction to that news? And then have there been any developments? Have we learned anything more about where that 10% bump is going? Have states figured out what they're doing with it?
Yeah, so as you said, you know, I think the just overarching enthusiasm around the recognition of HCBS services and providing additional funding through the rescue plan is certainly a positive and part of, I think, a trend that this administration really does value and recognizes the value of home and community-based care. So that's all good. The devil is in the details, however, and I think everyone is eagerly anticipating the release of the CMS guidance, you know, coming from the actual act. And we're hearing that, you know, that could be, you know, as soon as the 15th of May or sometime around that. So it should be soon. I remain optimistic that the guidance will be consistent with the legislative intent of the act as I see it, right? States should spend no less than they have historically on HCBS. And in making specific investments to improve or enhance HCBS, will become eligible for an additional 10% match that will fund those investments, with the, you know, caveat of it supplements and does not supplant state spending. I think, you know, hopefully through, you know, similar to what we saw with Appendix K waivers in terms of CMS quickly being able to approve changes to Medicaid home and community-based care, I hope to see that CMS will approve state actions, you know, retroactive to April 1st when the funding started, and quickly so that states can, you know, implement these investments that will benefit the workforce and the providers and the consumers. Rate increases that translate, you know, into improved wages and benefits seem like a very easy, common kind of investment. As you mentioned, those there is a fiscal cliff next March 31st, where the 10% funding would go away. But I think there's a fair number of states that have already planned for increases that they may be able to accelerate so that they can ease the burden on their state budget and get those provider rate increases in earlier or in place earlier so that, you know, we can increase wages and benefits. Outside of that, I'm hopeful that states will focus attention on recruitment and retention strategies or funding to providers to promote recruitment and retention, improve recruitment and retention, because, you know, really the thing I hear most is the workforce shortages and workforce crisis that is surrounding most providers in HCBS.
Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question. What's the staffing situation like at Addus? You know, most providers tell us that finding enough dedicated quality in-home care professionals remains challenge number one. It was even challenge number one during the pandemic. I don't know if this also applies to Addus, but I've heard a lot of challenges with contract labor right now too, just because their rates are kind of through the roof due to demand.
Yeah, we don't use a lot of contract labor, so I don't know that I could really comment on that, you know, outside of perhaps some of our home health therapy businesses. But yeah, you know, I think everybody is facing this. And there certainly are regional pockets, right, of very, very difficult places. New York State, for example, is really difficult to recruit in right now. But I hear from, you know, our partnership members and lots of folks I talk in the industry, it's the biggest challenge. And, you know, I don't know that, you know, obviously there's been a lot of coverage in the media and talk within, you know, Congress about the impacts of the enhanced unemployment and, you know, are people receiving more money to not work than to work? And I think that's very difficult to assess with a broad kind of brush. You know, a lot of our workers are raising families, have kids who may or may not be in school. And so that inhibits, you know, their ability to go back to a full-time schedule or what. So I don't think you can, you know, cast all the sort of blame on this on unemployment benefits, but it is certainly having an effect, right? You know, provider relief funds, temporary rate increases, payment from some states on retention payments. You know, there's a fair amount of funding going in to support people, right? That have had impacts from the pandemic, and that has, you know, has to have at least some impact on folks' ability and willingness and availability to go back to work. So we could be suffering sort of just a spike as we sort of begin the end of the pandemic. But after that, even we're, you know, this problem's not going away. This is the biggest challenge in all of HCBS personal care services provided in the home. It's, you know, there's just the sheer numbers of folks that are attracted to this role versus the consumer demand. There's an inequity there that needs to get addressed.
And we're just at the very beginning of that consumer demand peaking, right? I mean, we still haven't even felt the full force of the quote unquote silver tsunami that's coming.
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
So there's the American Rescue Plan. There's also the American Jobs Plan. That obviously still would need to be approved by Congress. And it's anybody's guess whether that happens or not. But the American Jobs Plan, as part of that infrastructure proposal, it would send $400 billion toward home and community-based services. Similar to, you know, the previous question, what was your initial reaction around that? Any high-level takeaways that our listeners should be aware of?
So again, I think, you know, without a lot of detail, right, attached to that proposal, this sort of symbolism of this administration highlighting significant investments in long-term care, particularly HCBS long-term care, is a significant point and something I think the industry should have, you know, some pride in accomplishment with, right? You know, I would say that, you know, calling for HCB investments is the most direct recognition of the value and the need for investment in long-term care by any administration in our history. So I really hope that this is a start of a dialogue for dramatic change in long-term care services that results in establishing them as a core part of the healthcare delivery system. Not only is that beneficial for patients, has the opportunity for cost savings, but it's a key to improving the long-term care, home and community-based workforce shortage as well. We need to give these people not just higher wages and benefits and living wages and benefits, but a real more feeling of purpose, right? That you're not just the cleaning lady or the girl, right? It's somebody who's vested in the long-term improvement in the chronic condition of their patients and are part of the team that's helping to manage that. That really, I think, will draw more individuals to want to do this type of work. And it's not just the money alone.
Are there any potential downsides or challenges to the Biden administration's focus on home and community-based services? For example, and you know, I don't want to get into a discussion about whether unions are good or unions are bad, but the Biden administration has talked about creating stronger unions, especially around the in-home care workforce.
Yeah, so you know, in this day and age, when aren't there challenges and potential downsides to any legislative initiative, I think. We're really reserving any judgment on sort of policy changes that come with the investment of dollars until more details emerge. You know, it really remains unclear if and what policy changes in HCBS could even be considered under reconciliation, which seems like the only pathway that this gets through Congress. So,
if you need a reminder, we are speaking to Darby Anderson, EVP and Chief Strategy Officer at Addus. He's also the Vice Chairman of the Partnership for Medicaid Home-Based Care. All right, well, Darby, we touched on a lot already, but apart from the American Rescue Plan, the American Jobs Plan, the role of technology in home-based care, apart from EVV, what else has your attention, either at your role at Addus or with PMHC?
So I think from both perspectives, you know, we're always paying attention to discussions and actions related to increasing minimum wage and other potential workforce impacts that, you know, although generally we would agree are beneficial to the industry, they almost always require additional funding. And so, you know, federal initiatives that put a burden on states to fund are problematic. Local or municipal actions that put, you know, pressure on states to fund are equally problematic. So we're always kind of, you know, balancing that, you know, what is good for, you know, our workforce, but has to have a, you know, has to have a pay for. So I think both at Addus and PMHC, we're continue to focus on that. The workforce shortages, we've already talked about that. Again, I can't talk about this subject without, you know, referencing that again. It is such a critical function and problem. But, you know, EVV, we've talked about, there's a lot, I guess, is the short answer. But, you know, those things are really just the high priority items that we're looking at.
And I think in the background, especially when we talk about the American Rescue Plan, the American Jobs Plan, there's been this debate going on about the role of long-term care facilities moving forward. What are your thoughts on, you know, SNF versus HCBS, nursing homes versus home care, and all of those discussions? Do you think that there's a role for the SNF of today moving forward?
So I guess the SNF of today, I don't know how to think about that as a definition, but I guess globally, I would say there's always a place for, you know, skilled nursing facilities in the healthcare continuum. I'm a huge believer in consumer choice, big believer in care at the right place at the right time. You know, clearly the growth trend in HCBS indicates the consumer's preference for care at home when it comes to long-term care. But certainly think, you know, skilled nursing facilities remain a part of the post-acute landscape, but, you know, perhaps less likely to be utilized outside of shorter patient stays in a step down to, you know, an ultimate plan to return home. Any home care operator that tells you all clients can be cared for at home is not being truthful. There are consumers that need round-the-clock institutional type setting, but they probably don't need that forever. Let's focus, you know, the care provided on improvement and restoration to a level of functioning that allows them to stay at home and in their community. I think that's what people want. And therefore, as a provider and as a global provider healthcare delivery system, we should be focused on that. But everybody plays their part. And, you know, long-term placements of, you know, elderly and people with disabilities, you know, into an institution, you know, and, you know, that's the care plan. That's not realistic in this day and age.
Yeah. And just to clarify for listeners, I think you know, in my mind, what I was getting at with the sniff of today comment is I don't know if we're going to see a lot of facilities with shared rooms and shared bathrooms moving forward. I think at minimum, the pandemic made a lot of these operators reevaluate their infection control protocols. I just think that the facility of 2019 is not going to be viable come 2022, 2023 and beyond. I think we're going to see some of these kind of alternatives, like the greenhouse project, for example, gain a lot of momentum.
Yeah, I agree. And I guess to what I was saying, my point is there is always going to be a need for institutional care for, you know, the population that we serve in home care at certain points. And I think the focus should be, let's make those facilities the best facilities they can be for the patients in terms of quality, in terms of outcomes. And if that means a shift in mindset around, you know, what you're talking about, in addition to, you know, we're a part of the continuum for a short stay with a return to home plan, then, you know, they should be incentivized and focused on accomplishing that.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Sometimes I think people get caught up in the, you know, it's A or B, it's home care or SNFs, and fail to realize that a lot of times too, long-term care facilities and home care providers are partners. They work together rather frequently, I believe, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to the extent should more, I would say.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left here. Looking ahead, what else is in store for Addis over the final few quarters of the year? Could you share any other plans or priorities for 2021?
You know, I think we've been pretty clear in our calls and stuff about our objectives. We, you know, obviously continuing to keep our employees, clients, and patients safe. As I sort of said, we begin the end of the pandemic, or to emerge from the pandemic, hopefully. Continue to drive organic growth in all of our segments, where we do have a robust M&A expectation and pipeline. Our current focus steeped a bit towards clinical services in key markets to sort of round out our offerings there. And we're also accelerating value-based initiatives, you know, opportunities with health systems, managed care organizations, and really any other risk-bearing entity. We're really looking to, you know, kind of utilize all segments of our services, but really, you know, kind of uniquely hinged on the personal care aide, who spends more time with these consumers than anybody in the healthcare system, and really accessing them to be a part of that team. That's a big part of our value-based initiatives with multiple partners across our platform.
A good example of that, and I'm glad you brought this up, but I think it was earlier this year, Addis announced agreement with Presbyterian down in New Mexico, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Good, great partner, Presbyterian in New Mexico, where we've got a very large footprint of personal care, home health, hospice, and even, you know, visiting physician services. So a great place for us to, you know, really have a meaningful project around, you know, emergency department avoidance, hospitalization, readmission, lots of care gap closures, and really focused on utilizing the personal care aide and their unique relationship with Presbyterian members to drive those sort of outcomes, or those outcomes specifically. So yeah, we're excited about that project, as well as quite a few others that we have building in the pipeline.
And I know you already mentioned just following minimum wage, making sure that providers could recruit and retain their workers. But any other priorities in terms of the partnership that you'd like to highlight for the rest of this year?
It's a little harder to pin down the partnership priorities. We kind of often have to adapt to reflect the changing winds in Washington. But there's a couple things we're excited about, and we've talked about one of them, that this fundamental change opportunity in personal care. Just feel like it's never been better. And, you know, home care and HCBS is really one of the few remaining issues that has bipartisan support in Washington. So we really want to keep it that way and really try to make the most of that opportunity. But with regard to the partnership, you know, we have we've recruited a number of new members that, along with some of our, you know, existing members, they provide a lot of services in what's called private duty nursing care. Or sometimes referred to as PDN. I kind of think of it and like to call it more continuous care nursing, or continuous care shift nursing, which is, you know, home-based clinical care provided to support primarily pediatric patients, but not exclusively, that have very complex medical needs. These are folks that are ventilator dependent, require tube feedings, and really require round-the-clock skilled care, clinical care. It's an important and growing segment of home care that, you know, historically hasn't had much of a voice in DC. People, you know, even the term, even the name private duty nursing is very confusing to people. Like, what does that mean? Like, they often refer, you know, some people interpret that as private pay home care of any type. So I think we've formed a working group with our membership through the partnership that's really, you know, really trying to better define the service, you know, perhaps sort of rebrand it, even, you know, in statute, rename the services, and working to establish some more uniform national standards for care and benefit coverage. So that's that work group and part of the partnership and the members that are driving that, you know, is really valuable. And I think something, you know, the partnership's really excited about, kind of, you know, speaks to the purpose of why the partnership was formed, to really kind of give a national voice and perspective to, you know, services that are really, you know, driven, you know, on a state basis.
That's kind of funny that you bring it up, because that's probably one of the number one challenges that we face. You know, words are obviously very important for home healthcare news. And we've run into the challenge of anytime we use the term private duty, people just automatically assume we have to be talking about home care, private pay home care. So I definitely have seen that confusion firsthand from where I sit. But that wraps up all the questions that I had for this episode of Disrupt. I've been speaking with Darby Anderson, EVP and Chief Strategy Officer at Addus, also the Vice Chairman of the Partnership for Medicaid Home-Based Care. Darby, thank you so much for joining me today.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Bob Holly, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.